Thank you. Be seated. Court is ready to hear argument from petitioners in Kerrville versus Fernandez and Texas Parks and Wildlife versus Gonzalez.
May it please the court, Ms. Julie Parsley will present argument for the petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. My name is Julie Parsley, and along with David Halper, who represents petitioners in these cases, the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department and the Kerrville State Hospital. At the heart of this dispute is the doctrine of sovereign immunity and the erosion that it will undergo if the lower court's opinion is left unchecked. This court should stop that erosion by reaffirming the well-settled doctrine that sovereign immunity can only be waived by clear and unambiguous express language or clear and express legislative intent.
Haven't we already eroded that doctrine?
No, Your Honor. Actually, although Barfield said that the language did not have to be crystal clear, what Barfield did and what it found was so close to the actual language in the Act being a waiver of sovereign immunity that it did not, that it had, it compelled the finding that immunity had been waived, which is far different than what the Court of Appeals did here, which was decide that since it couldn't figure out really any other purpose for the language other than to waive immunity, then immunity had to be waived. It didn't look to find a clear and unambiguous legislative intent apparent on the face of the statute, which is what this court did in Barfield.
What other purpose could there be for Article 8307GC, where they say that for purposes of the anti-retaliation law, the individual agency shall be considered the employer? Does that signal this is the defendant in such a suit?
Well, there are two possible readings of that language. First, as this court said in Barfield, citing its prior decision in Duhart versus State, that language could be there in the event that a future legislature waived immunity. The fact that it was incorporated by reference is not to show that immunity had been waived. The definition of employer as the individual agency, this court held in Barfield, doesn't also show an intent to waive because the word employer has no meaning under the Anti-Retaliation Act. The word person is the word used in the Anti-Retaliation Act, and person can be much broader than employer. It could be a co-worker or...
But haven't we sensed by case law sort of defined that really and truly an employer is the entity that you're looking at under that statute?
That is what the Court of Appeals did, and that was really their error, because in order to comply with Barfield and find clear and unambiguous legislative intent, you have to look at the face of the statute. The Court of Appeals looked at the case law to see if the employer would be a person, and actually in doing so misconstrued the case law to some degree, but just the fact that they looked outside the statute to an outside source and had to find that waiver, the nexus, the necessary nexus to waive immunity, shows that the statute's ambiguous on its face, and that ambiguity is fatal to the claim of waiver. The second possible reading besides the Duhart exception, which is the preservation of a claim that could be, for which immunity could be waived in the future, is the notion that the language could be there as a definition in the event and a worker sought and secured permission to sue from the legislature. So there are two other possible readings of this language that prevent a finding of waiver from the face of the statute. It's also important to note that these alternative readings were not possible in Barfield. In Barfield, this court was compelled by the election of remedies provision, which allowed an employee of a political subdivision to sue the political subdivision either under the Whistleblower Act or under the Anti-Retaliation Act. The court rightly said, under the Whistleblower Act, immunity is clearly waived. It's waived by the statutory language of that act. The legislature could not have possibly intended to have given an employee a choice that really wasn't a choice at all, a choice between a cause of action for which immunity has been waived and a cause of action for which immunity has not been waived. When faced with that possibility, the court said it's clear that the legislature waived immunity under the Anti-Retaliation Act. There's no way that it would be even plausible that the legislature had given an employee those choices in the event it waived immunity in the future.
Unless the employee wanted to go to the legislature.
Or get permission to sue. But
I mean, why wouldn't that? I don't understand why that argument doesn't, could not have been applied in Barfield.
It couldn't have applied in Barfield because on the face of that statute, it said an employee may sue either under this statute or that statute. And the reasoning applied by the court in Barfield was that that would remove the requirement that they would have to go get permission to sue. But the language in and of itself was so close to saying immunity is waived for anti-retaliation claims that immunity was waived. It was really unambiguous when you looked at the face of it, or else that provision would have had no meaning in totality. So Barfield, if you look at the spectrum of cases of waiver of sovereign immunity, clear and unambiguous, clear legislative language, immunity is waived, is certainly on one side. What the Court of Appeals did is further down the spectrum. They really did not approach the statute from the standpoint that immunity is preserved unless waived. Barfield is up next to, as close up to the absolute express waiver of sovereign immunity that you can get without the express language. But that's not what the Court of Appeals did here. Then there are two other facts that show the ambiguity in the statute. Well, one we've already discussed, which is the fact that the court looked to the outside case law to find the necessary nexus for waiver. And that shows that the case law that the statute is ambiguous on its face.
Well, what about the language in the statute that talks about that there can be no suit beyond the cause of action and damages that are provided for under the Tort Claims Act? That's the second part of the Court of Appeals analysis.
It is. And the Court of Appeals, to the extent the Court of Appeals held that this court found that that language indicated a waiver of immunity in Barfield, the court was wrong. The court did not resolve that issue, did not reach that conclusion in Barfield. It found the language to be troubling, but it did not find it to create an intent to waive immunity. That language has been looked at more or less as just a limitation. The First Court of Appeals in Houston has construed that language as meaning, in the event a worker should opt out of the worker compensation system, what the legislature put that language in there for was to prevent them from being able to bring a cause of action for personal injuries that wasn't contemplated otherwise by the Tort Claims Act. So that language is really a limitation as opposed to an express waiver, express intent to waive sovereign immunity. Another fact that shows the ambiguity in the statute is the fact that the San Antonio Court of Appeals has looked at this question and said that this act waives immunity. Yet three other courts of appeals have looked at the exact same issue and the exact same question and have held that immunity is not waived.
Ms. Parsley, I'm curious, is there any evidence at all in either the committee hearings or the floor debate? Any statements by any legislators that they understood or believed that in adopting the State Applications Act that they were waiving immunity to suit?
Let me preface my answer by saying, again, going outside the statute, the express language of the statute indicates the ambiguity of it. So really looking at either case law or the legislative history is not appropriate.
I understand that, but given that.
No. There is really, the legislative history is inconclusive. There are, there's not really nothing in the 81 amendment, and in 89 is when they rewrote the entire Workers' Compensation Act through the first regular session and two called sessions, and there's nothing that's inconclusive on the matter.
Person, let me take you back to that language we talked about just a minute ago. You said that Barfield really didn't base its decision on comparable language in the statute that was being interpreted there. If I understood you correctly?
No, what I meant to say was that Barfield didn't hold that the limitation of the tort claims language indicated an intent to waive immunity. The court did construe the language and applied it to the Political Subdivisions Act, but it did not say that that particular provision indicated an intent to waive immunity like the election of remedies provision did. It was persuaded at the end, the court was persuaded in the final analysis by the election of remedies provision. Three other courts of appeals have looked at this issue and determined that waiver was not intended by the court of appeals, by the legislature. The San Antonio court stands alone and has misapplied this court's holding in Barfield. There are important policy reasons underlying sovereign immunity that need to be considered when looking at waivers. The legislature, sovereign immunity is not solely based on the notion that the king can do no wrong. What the legislature is doing when it waives sovereign immunity or allows for people to bring claims is that it's creating a balance between allowing injured citizens to bring their claims against the state treasury, for which there are limited resources. The legislature has to determine who should bear the burden and whether a particular burden should be spread. In the absence of clear legislative intent to spread this burden, that Anti-Retaliation Act claims are the type of claims that, in the balance, the legislature has determined should be compensated, then immunity has been preserved. The bright line test from Barfield is that it must be unambiguous language and unambiguous legislative intent apparent from the face of the statute. This court should reverse the lower court and hold again, as it did in Barfield, that this is the test. For these reasons, petitioner respectfully prays that this court reverse the Court of Appeals and render judgment in favor of petitioners.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Kenneth Howell will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Kenneth W. Howell, and I represent Rose Fernandez in Kerrville versus Fernandez State Hospital. With me here today is Ms. Monty Swearingen, who represents as counsel for Rogelio Gonzalez in the Texas Parson Wildlife case. I would like to begin my presentation today by addressing a letter of grief that was filed by the state, I believe, last Wednesday or Thursday, discussing several Supreme Court cases and suggesting that the Supreme Court cases readings of sovereign immunity and waiver would show the Court of Appeals below is in error.
Mr. Howell, before you do that, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Why isn't it a reasonable interpretation of the statute that the legislature may have intended? Well, once we pass a resolution allowing someone to sue us, then we now have parameters in terms of cap on the damages and who you can, we now know who you can sue as an employer. Why isn't that a reasonable interpretation?
Are you talking about the State Applications Act, Your Honor?
Yes.
I think that is a reasonable interpretation that they've got the part, they've got the statute saying that this is the defendant in this type of lawsuit, and these are what your damages in this type of lawsuit are going to be limited to.
But why can't we assume that the legislature put those in place with the understanding that they would still need to get permission to sue?
I think because of the language that the Fernandez court looked at in 15C, where it designates the state employer as the individual agency, I think that language raises the issue of waiver, and because of that, there's no need to get permission to sue. I think it's expressed, or as the Fernandez court correctly held, there's no other reasonable construction that can be applied to that statute or any other purpose for it, designating the state agency as the individual in a Chapter 451 suit, unless they intended for people to be able to sue them. I think that obviates the need for permission as the statute is written.
But the legislature in other statutes has clearly expressed when it wants to waive sovereign immunity, so it knows how to do that. why didn't it just take the extra step here and put a waiver provision?
I don't know why it didn't take the extra step to expressly say we are waiving immunity anymore in the Political Subdivisions Act or in the State Applications Act than it did in the Political Subdivisions Act, except to say that perhaps, in my opinion, I think the language designating that defendant, that is the state agency as a defendant, is so clear, they probably felt it wasn't necessary to also go one step further and say, and by the way, because this is a defendant and this is the cap on damages, we are waiving.
I agree that if there is an alternative reasonable explanation for that provision, which your opposing counsel has offered, would you agree that if that were a reasonable explanation, that would create an ambiguity that would preclude a finding of waiver?
Would I agree?
Well, I understand you're saying her interpretation is not reasonable. But if we were found that there are other reasonable explanations for that particular subsection, would you agree that as a matter of law, there's an ambiguity and we cannot find an express waiver?
Well, I would agree that there is an ambiguity. I don't know necessarily that would still leave the court or still leave an interpretation that there wasn't a waiver. I think the reasons they gave, I guess the ones you're talking about would be the possible future cause of action, which I think is pretty much limited to the Duhart opinion. The court in that case was just trying to think why to give an explanation for it. I think here, again, that language gives them the permission and the right, the permission and the right to bring a suit. And under Chapter 451, and I don't think there is any ambiguity. I don't think you need to start stretching to try to find reasons why this might apply or this might apply in different contexts. As I was going to say at the beginning of the argument, I think what we have to look at is the Barfield opinion, and what we have to look at is how we're going to frame this issue. And going to this letter reply, the Supreme Court cases they cite, I think the U.S. Supreme Court cases are Fernandez and Barfield are entirely consistent, for they say that an express waiver must be found in statutory language or, quote, such overwhelming implication from the text as will leave no room for any other reasonable construction.
If the legislature's trying to make this so crystal clear, why did they use the term employer when the Anti-Retaliation Act uses the term person?
I think that, as the Fernandez Court observed, you know, which person is the employer in a state employee case, the state or the state agency? It was to designate this is the person who is the employer, who is the defendant, private party defendant in this lawsuit, rather than the state itself. I also think one thing that needs to be brought up here, which I think I mentioned in my response and certainly in my brief in the Court of Appeals, is if we look at the definitions of employer and state under each of these two acts, Political Subdivisions Act and the State Applications Act, there's different definitions. The State Applications Act adopts the definition of employer from the definitions set forth at the beginning of the Labor Code in 401.011, which defines, I've got the exact language, it defines the an employer to include a person who has a contract of hire. So that same definition doesn't exist in the Political Subdivisions Act, which under Barfield might have raised a question as to whether or not using the word employer is the same as using person. But I think if you look at the State Act, it's different. It adopts a different definition of employer, a definition of employer that defines employer as a person. So I think the definition is there. Why they would use the word employer instead of person, I guess we'd have to, you know, the legislature perhaps felt because of those definitions, it was unnecessary. Perhaps it felt it was being clear enough as it was. I think, again, going back to the holding of Barfield, we need to look at how we frame these issues. The three courts of appeals that found different than Fernandez, and as the state argues, frame the issue in terms of whether or not this is an express, clear, and unambiguous waiver. But there's a second part of that equation, and the second part of that equation is what the Barfield court relied on, and that is that there's no other reasonable doubt that the lot must have been intended, which is just what the Supreme Court cases the state was relying upon says, such overwhelming implication from the text as will leave no room for any other reasonable construction. That's just almost, I think Barfield almost tracks that language by saying they look to see if there's no room for any reasonable doubt as to the purpose of the statute. And there can be, I think if you look at that provision, 50, I always go by the modern codification, 502.01b, it points out for purposes of this chapter, and I think this is important too, for purposes of this chapter and chapter 451, the individual state agency shall be the employer. There's not a similar provision in the Political Subdivisions Act. There's, which I think addresses their argument that the definitional provisions of these alone don't rise to immunity, but this is something more. These cases where immunity is found is something more than what's in the Political Subdivisions Act. It specifically says for purposes of this chapter and chapter 451, the individual state agency shall be the defendant in the lawsuit, basically. So how I think that's more than just a definitional provision. There's no counterpart in political subdivisions law. I think another place that, another argument that needs to be addressed, especially with regard to other courts of appeals opinions, the state seems to argue that the only way we can ever find a legislative waiver is if there's an election of remedies provision. I don't think the court in Barfield found that the language of the election of remedies provision is what expressly and clearly waived immunity. It was just that, if that its inclusion, the fact that it was included, there was no other reason for including that if a person didn't have a choice whether to sue under either statute. Therefore, they must have the right to sue. And the same analysis applies in the state Applications Act. It doesn't have to be an election of remedies. It just has to be language that leaves no reasonable doubt to its purpose. And the language, I think, the Fernandez Court correctly held leaves no reasonable doubt as to its purpose is to designate the individual state agency as a defendant in such a suit, which leaves no other inescapable inference of waiver. Why would the state be able, I mean, why, if there wasn't waiver, why would it be in there? So the fact that there's an absence of an election of remedies provision in the State Applications Act doesn't mean that there's also not a waiver. I don't think the Barfield Court found that an election of remedies is necessary to show waiver. It's just that it was there. Why else would it be there if there wasn't a waiver? And I think those are the, I think that's the key thing about Barfield, is that it is addressing this kind of two ways of looking at a statute. Is it clear and express? Well, if it's not, well, does it leave any other reasonable construction or any reasonable doubt as to its purpose? And it doesn't. In fact, I think when you look at the language of the State Applications Act, there's really a much stronger argument for waiver from anything there is in the Political Subdivisions Act considered by Barfield. Because of this provision designating the individual as a state agent, as well as the cap on damages and the inclusion of the Tort Claims Act, which I believe was included in the 1989 Act.
Well, how do you explain, I know in Barfield the question was left open, how do you explain language in the State Applications Act, there shall be no suit beyond the actions authorized by the Texas Tort Claims Act? Do you remember in Barfield how that was left open?
Yes, and I think...
What does that mean?
I think the Barfield Court... I guess that is kind of troublesome language from the standpoint that an action under the Tort Claims Act would necessarily have to require use of motor-driven equipment and tangible personal property. And I think the Barfield Court, in a way, did answer that question. They said, surely the legislature didn't intend to limit workers' compensation benefits to just these types of actions, I think, because obviously there's other ways employees could be injured on the job other than by the use of motor-driven equipment or tangible personal or real property. And it just did not make sense for the legislature to limit workers' compensation benefits
But this is a limitation on the anti-retaliation cause of action, isn't it? So then it even makes even less sense.
Well, I think what the point of the Barfield court was on that is that we can't limit the meaning of this waiver to just personal, to just those circumstances of the Tort Claims Act when looking at all of the Workers' Compensation Act.
So you don't know what this means then either. I mean, it doesn't make much sense.
I don't think it makes much sense. I think, and I forget which justice asked this about the legislative history. I did have one of these legislative intent services look up a lot of the legislative intent on this and the House floor debates, and there isn't much conclusive. But one thing, I didn't go ahead and include it in the brief because I didn't feel like it was that persuasive one way or the other, but one thing I did notice, and I could provide this to the court in a post-submission form, was that was what they were concerned about when they were talking about all these actions, was the cap on damages, was whether or not they were going to, and this was in the context of bad faith, this was in the context of any wrongful acts, including termination, and they were concerned that governmental units were going to get hitches in excess of those caps and exemplary damages. And that's what the concerns that were voiced amongst the different congressmen discussing it showed. Now, how conclusive that is in this particular case, I don't know, but it would shed some light on that if I could provide that to the court.
You're always free to submit a post-submission brief.
And I think when we get down to it and we talk about public policy, there's no reason why the legislature would extend the protection of this statute to municipal employees and not state employees. I think both are entitled to protection of the statute.
Maybe it depends on whose money it is that would be awarded.
Pardon me?
I said it may depend on whose money would be awarded as between a state defendant and a municipal defendant. And they might have less regard for the municipalities because it's not state money.
Well, I guess that is a rather self-serving reason, but I think a lot of it, I don't know. I know as I was going through law school, I always heard the story that, you know, seeing law made is like seeing sausage made, and it is kind of a mess. I read that legislative history, and I didn't give it to this court because it doesn't make much sense. I think a lot of these congressmen, when they throw out terms like causes of action, they don't really know, but they're not speaking of any specific cause. They don't really, I think what they're thinking of is just the cap on the damages. And if you read those, read the debate on that, I think that's what's clear. That was the main concern, was the cap on damages. I think it was assumed all along that these types of suits could be brought. And I think, and I, again, I guess this, I don't have any real authorities, my personal opinion, I think they put, by putting the language they did in there, limiting damages and naming a defendant, perhaps the legislature felt it went without saying, by the way, we are also waiving immunity. I think it's from the language there, there's no other reason why it would be there, and that's what they intended to do.
Any other questions?
Are there any other questions for the...
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court. With all due respect to opposing counsel, the respondents have given this court no clear legislative intent and no clear statutory language by which immunity could be waived. But his argument does point out the confusion that both the lower court and the respondent has about the test. They're confusing the putative purpose test, that there can be no other purpose for the statute, with the Barfield test, which is there is no other reasonable construction for the language. That is really where the confusion lies in the Court of Appeals decision. The court looked at the language and said, well, it looks to us like they meant to waive immunity, so we're going to say that they did. But they didn't look to Duhart or to Barfield and the rejection of the putative purpose argument and say, is there any other reasonable construction of this language, even if it's not entirely satisfactory? But if they exist, then that is fatal to the waiver claim.
The legislature, in a case I think this court recently decided, gave permission for a lawsuit to be brought, but made a point that there were certain damages that the plaintiffs could not recover, and that was a part of the legislative permission to sue. If the legislature thinks it could do that, then what does that do to your argument that, well, really, this statute was not a waiver of immunity. This statute was just sort of a statement of what would happen if, as in hand, some point in the future, the legislature might permit some plaintiff to sue under these circumstances. I mean, they could do that right in the permission language of their resolution.
That's right. And actually, the statute, the remedy code, provides that a waiver of suit under the permission to sue statute does not waive liability. But what it would mean to have the definitions and to have the cap is that the judgment that would be entered by the court would comply with that statutory language, which would then they could take the judgment to the legislature and try to get the appropriation for it. It would really be there more for the court, for the judgment, for the purposes of the judgment and the lower court's rendering the decision as opposed to what would actually be the waiver of liability.
Is it really a reasonable construction to think the legislature anticipated that individual workers' compensation claimants would come to the legislature seeking a resolution of permission to sue?
It is as reasonable a construction as the Duhart explanation that they have been, that they placed the cause of action there.
And that the legislature would make individual determinations based on individual claimants on whether or not they should be allowed to sue.
Yes.
Why is that reasonable?
Well, it may not be a very satisfactory answer, but it is a construction of the statute because that's the way.
So you said it has to be a reasonable construction of the statute. Why is it reasonable to think then that the legislature would make individual determinations that would result perhaps in non-uniform application of the anti-retaliation statute to persons making workers' compensation claims around the state?
It is reasonable because the legislature, it's reasonable in the balance because the legislature may have determined that it was not likewise reasonable to waive immunity for all claims and that the legislature wanted to retain the control to determine which claims and which circumstances against which agencies would be viable or should be brought and compensated.
Don't you think there's a distinction in Duhart where it's purely incorporating another statute? And this scheme where there's an incorporation and then there's this express statement
about what the terms mean.
Actually, that definition existed in Duhart. In the dissent points out by Justice Campbell, he says that the incorporation of the statute plus the definition of the employer as the Department of Transportation in that case, would compel him to believe that immunity had been waived. So Duhart was really very on point, especially including the idea that it had the definition as well.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the second clause. The court will now take another brief recess.
All rise.